If you could skip work like Ferris Bueller, what would you do?
I'd go outside, no shirt, play with a dog.
Why no shirt?
The sun. Just gotta bronze this bod, you know?
Chelsea Lewis and I ditched work one day to have some Ferris Bueller-style fun. No, that audio clip I just played was not what we did. You'll hear what we did coming up in today's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Kitty O'Connell. Thanks for listening. In news this week, there have been new developments in the prescription drug scandal at the Toma VA. Reporter Bill Glauber and Watchdog columnist Daniel Bice discussed the latest with editor Greg Borowski during this week's JS on Politics show.
Bill, you were up in Toma this week for the hearing of Senator Johnson's panel looking into the problem. What was the atmosphere and what did we learn from that?
Well, the atmosphere was sober. They released a 357-page report on the Toma VA on the scandal about, you know, the overprescription of opioids up there, the deaths of at least one U.S. former Marine. The Marine's family was there, and there were a couple of congressmen, senators there, including Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson, and they had some questions, and I think the most dramatic moment was Sloan Gibson, the deputy secretary of the VA, basically said, "We failed to get it done," took responsibility for really a terrible situation that existed there for many years.
All right, and Dan, you wrote about a part of this, which was the one of the former doctors there in Candyland, as they called it, right?
Right, he was the Candy Man.
Candy Man.
Yeah, his name is David Houlihan. He was the chief of staff there. And there had been this talk for years that he was accused of this wide distribution of opioids. And in the report, it turns out that in 2012, investigators went in from the VA's office to talk to him and to talk to his nurse practitioner about some problems there. And two of the doctors at the scene concluded that he was, quote, impaired or was possibly involved in illicit drug use himself. His pupils were dilated. The nurse practitioner was basically falling asleep and appeared incredibly tired. But the bizarre thing is they witnessed this. They went to their supervisors and said that the investigators did and said, "What should we do?" And they said, "Tell the director at the Toma VA." And apparently the issue just died there. Nobody did anything. And Dr. Houlihan stayed there for the next 3 years until this whole most recent opioid scandal blew up.
For more details on what's unfolding with the Toma VA, visit jsonline.com. You can also find more by downloading our JS on Politics podcast that's available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. So, if Chelsea and I didn't try to, quote, bronze our bods during our Ferris Bueller Day, what did we do? Chelsea hopped in the booth with me to break it down. So we took a Ferris Bueller day off.
We sure did.
And we got into a little bit of mischief, but the thing I like about it was just the right enough amount of mischief where our boss did not have to bail us out of jail.
That's clutch, yes.
I think she preferred that as well. But we did get in a little bit. So we dressed up in period piece costumes. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, that was your idea, which I fully support. I think the whole idea of a Ferris Bueller day is to do things you never would do on a normal day. We kind of joked before we started, like, we're adults. A real adult skip day would probably involve a lot of napping, you know, maybe some coffee or beer on the patio. But we really wanted to do some kind of mischievous things that we wouldn't do any other day of the week. So we went down and rented some costumes, some Victorian costumes, because why the heck not? And then we went to where we thought we might fit in, the streets of old Milwaukee at the Milwaukee Public Museum. I think we fit in a little too well. Do you want to talk about that?
You know, when the first mom came up to us and asked for a picture of us in our period piece costumes, I knew we really had nailed it. You know, at that point, we'd gone on the trolley there and we'd ridden on the old school bike and we bought candy in the candy shop. But it was that moment where I knew, like, this was a success because she did it and then two other families did it. And now we, you know, as we said in the story, have a potential side gig. Should journalism ever fall through, we're just going to be impersonators at museums.
Yeah, I'm sure they would love that. That's probably totally legal and welcome. No, but I think it was all in good fun. And yeah, so and then after we go outside and the fire station is right across the street in case you haven't been to the public museum. And we took some photos with the firemen because, of course, I think if we were really channeling Ferris Bueller, we may have tried to get a ride, but they seemed busy. In the real world, they have way more important things to do, so it was still nice of them to take a photo with us, but we had to rush out of there.
Yes, we had a reservation for Abe Froman, who in the movie is the Sausage King of Chicago. It was wonderful. We walk up in our Victorian garb and say, like, oh, table 4-2 for Abe Froman, thank you, very polite. And they, of course, call us Abby Froman because they're confused. I think it's one of those things where if you're a real, like, astute fan of the movie, you would know what that is. Mm-hmm. But we were, to be fair, just jumping this on Lake Park Bistro. Because, of course, we're in, you know, the nicest restaurant in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. wearing period garb.
Yes.
And they were so friendly and wonderful and never treated us like we were weirdos. But the one guy, the maitre d', asked us what we were doing, and we're like, we're having fun. And it was great.
Yeah. Have you been to Lake Park Bistro?
I hadn't been.
I hadn't either. So that was another one of those things that we never would have done this. And I can't believe I hadn't been there before then. It was beautiful. Beautiful setting on the lake. Really great food. And then towards the end of our meal, we had a little fun moment. Across the room, we overheard another one of the patrons ask her waiter. She was like, do you know what those ladies are doing over there? And the waiter had the best response. He's like, I think they're having lunch and they're having fun. I was like, yeah, that is absolutely what we're doing. Thank you, sir.
I also like that he politely answered that question in a way where he's like, listen, I'm not going to talk to them about this. Yeah. I don't want to be the one to have to ask them that question. So we're just going to say they're having fun.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, we hadn't borrowed a convertible because the one person we know who has a convertible was in Vegas. Whatever, dude. So we had kind of commandeered my sister's car with a sunroof, so that was close enough. But now it's time to bail someone else out, right? In Ferris Bueller's Day Off, they go to the school and make up this whole elaborate thing about Ferris's girlfriend has a death in the family, and they get her out. So we decided to bail out our intern.
Yes, our Sloane, as we called her. I should say we did take off the period garb at this point.
Yes. So it's getting a little hot.
Get a little hot, and always good to have the intern not think you're insane her first week there. Mm-hmm. So, but we took her to Miller Park, which they didn't have a game going on, but we sat at the TGI Fridays, which is great, right behind third base, and it was a beautiful sunny day. We got to harass Cubs fans, which felt a little weird for me being a Cubs fan, but, you know, consider the context, right? Unfortunately, they didn't have any tours available at that point, so we couldn't actually go on the field. But it's good to know now, like, get there early, go to the little kiosk outside of TGI Fridays and get a tour if you want to go on a day they don't have a game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also cool because our intern had never been to a major league ballpark. So now we kind of felt like we were helping her check that one off her box, too.
Yeah, and she's from North Carolina. And she said that when she first came to Milwaukee, she was driving, I don't know, somewhere, and one of the first things she noticed was Miller Park and how big and beautiful it was. So it was cool that we got to take her there.
And I think the thing that I appreciated most about this day was, as you said before, if I have a day off of work, I look at it as an opportunity to go through my to-do list, you know, to say, oh, I'm in the process of moving. I have to pack. I have to clean. I have to paint. I have to go and buy a coffee table or whatever. And this kind of helped me step back and realize that maybe the reason things I don't knock off my bucket list, that happens because I don't make the time to do it, because I don't prioritize maybe, you know, getting out and doing things that I haven't done before. Like, I've never rented a period piece and gone to the public museum, but why not? These things are fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the whole idea, the whole spirit of Ferris Bueller. And I think everyone should take one day and just do that. Just get a little crazy, get into enough mischief to have fun, not enough to get arrested or do anything illegal. And just, yeah, experience Milwaukee.
Now, Miller Park wasn't the last stop for the three of us. Find out what else we did and how you can plan your Ferris Bueller day at tapmilwaukee.com. The Milwaukee Bucks are building a brand new $524 million arena downtown. But before a single shovel goes into the dirt, there's a lot of work to be done. Architecture critic Mary Louise Schumacher talks with Tom Dakin about the groundwork for this massive construction project.
So, Tom, there's a lot happening already down near the new site for the Bucks Arena. There's, you know, the lots nearby where you can see action going on, and there are plans for demolition. You've got this new story coming out that kind of gives a tick-tock, really, of what's going to happen in the coming months. So
tell us
first about the demolition that's going to take place.
Okay, well, starting in about the next week or so, there are three buildings on the site of the future Bucks Arena. Most of this is parking lots, but there are three buildings that have to be torn down. And one is the old Kissinger Meats building, which was the only one that wasn't owned by the BMO Harris Bradley Center. The Bucks paid $2.5 million for that property, 10 times its assessed value last year. The other two buildings are an older brick building that's probably about a century old that was used for storage. And then there's the structure that the Bucks use for their cooling equipment. Mm-hmm. For cool down the building, as well as the ice making equipment for the hockey ice, the Bradley Center, those will both be torn down as well.
And all of that's going to happen within a week, about a week?
Roughly about that. Okay. Yeah, roughly about that. A week. It'll be done in about a week or two. And of course, with the groundbreaking ceremony coming up in the middle of the month, towards the end of the month, they want to have it done before that occurs.
Right.
And then in the meantime, in addition to that, the BMO Harris Bradley Center itself is having to make some renovations to sort of accommodate its building to the project, which is just to the north of where the BMO Harris Bradley Center is.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what they're doing.
Yeah. Mainly two things. First of all, on the north side of the BMO Harris Bradley Center, there's a loading dock. They have to reconfigure how the trucks come into the loading dock, because the old service drive, which the trucks used to come in and unload stuff, that's now part of the future arena site.
Okay.
So they're creating basically a new service drive so the trucks can come in either east or west of the arena off of either North 4th or North 5th Street. So that's part of what's going on. On top of that little bumped out area where the loading dock is, that's where they're putting the new cooling equipment. So they've literally taken like half of the cooling equipment from that building that's going to be torn down. They've moved it over to its new location. And the reason they didn't have to move everything over there is they no longer have to make ice for the Admirals hockey team. The Admirals have already announced they're moving as of this fall to the UW-Milwaukee Panther Arena.
Mm-hmm.
So the only time they have to make ice now is for when they have Disney on Ice and shows like that. And when you do that on a real sporadic basis, you just bring a semi-truck in with portable ice-making equipment, and that does it. So,
okay.
So they don't have to cool down the building as much. And then finally, on the, east side of the building, the prominent front face of the BMO Harris Bradley Center that we're all familiar with, you'll see a little strip of the granite has been removed, and there's some workers out there, and they're building a trash chute.
Okay.
Because they have to replace the trash chute that was on the north side.
Yeah.
They have to get that out of the way. And so there'll be a trash chute on the front of the building, not what you usually want, but it's a temporary measure for the final 2 or 3 years of that building's existence.
Right.
You know, to get rid of the trash.
Right. So we've got the clearing of the actual arena site. We've got these little tweaks that are happening to the BMO Harris Bradley Center. And then just to the north of all of that, there's some preparations taking place along the Park East as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Park East Strip. This has been going on for about a month or two. I think this started in April, if I remember correctly. There is a stormwater sewer that runs down the middle of the Park East Strip between Juneau and McKinley from roughly 8th to about North Old World 3rd. Excuse me, that has to be removed. You have to take all that out of there before you can start digging down to create foundations for everything that's going to be built on the Park East Strip. So they have been building a new stormwater sewer. This is the Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation project under McKinley Avenue. And as that gets completed, they're taking the old storm sewer out. That work will be done probably in about a week. And okay. and then once that's done, then the Bucks can go ahead and start digging in the ground to put up the arena parking structure, mm-hmm. which will be between Juno and McKinley east of 6th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're also going to build their new training facility, which is right. their own privately financed project. They're doing that all on their own.
Right.
That'll be north of Juno and west of North 6th Street.
Right.
So
the training center, the parking structure, and the arena, give us a rundown of when there's a groundbreaking on about June 18th,
correct,
right?
Right.
So give us a rundown of when we can expect to see construction begin and which buildings go up first?
Well, they're going to start doing all three pretty much at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, what you're going to see for at least, God, I would say 2-3 months longer, mm-hmm. is just going to be digging and really a lot of prep work.
Yeah.
The actual buildings rising out of the ground might start like towards the end of this year.
Okay.
The arena, of course, has to be done in time for the 2018-2019 NBA season, so fall of 2018. The parking structure and the training facility would be done prior to that.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure when, but they will be done prior to that. So that's basically it.
And will construction take place through the winter this year then?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You start digging in the ground. You know, you want to get digging in the ground before
right.
things freeze yeah. and then, you know. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then for those of us who, including you and I, who maybe work or live in the immediate vicinity, is there anything we should know about the roads and other inconveniences that might occur?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some shutdowns. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they'll have to shut down, probably be shutting down part of 4th Street during that period.
Right.
Already they've shut down part of McKinley Avenue,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, was inconveniencing some commuters coming in and out of downtown in order to do the stormwater sewer project.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll be seeing some of that.
For stories about the Milwaukee Bucks Arena, go to jsonline.com/arena or follow Tom's reporting on commercial real estate at his Land and Space blog on our site. There was a large outcry when Governor Scott Walker proposed taking the Wisconsin idea out of the University of Wisconsin's mission. Our editorial board is of the opinion that changing the mission statement was a terrible idea and a disservice to Wisconsin's academic tradition. The team wrote an editorial about this for Sunday's paper after a Dane County judge ordered Walker to release 82 pages of emails about this decision. Here's David Haynes and Ernie Franzen with more.
Hi, this is Dave Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I'm here with Ernie Franzen, an editorial writer and associate opinions editor, to talk about an opinion we have in this Sunday's paper. Ernie, we're writing about the release of some documents related to the Wisconsin idea. So what's our take going to be on that?
Well, our take is that we start from the premise that all records should be open, that these emails that the governor tried to hide for a year should have been released a long time ago. And we're certainly in accord with the judge's decision, which came down a week ago Friday, ordering him to release, 82 pages of emails related to the idea of slimming down the university's mission and taking out the words, the Wisconsin idea.
Right. And we sort of have a twofold opinion on this. One is we want the records out there, and we think that it's important for the public to know about it. But we also have some concerns about removing the Wisconsin idea from state law, right?
Sure. And, I mean, the Wisconsin idea goes back to the beginning of the university, and it's about the mission to seek the truth and to have the university reach through all corners of Wisconsin. That's important to the state. That's important to the university. It's important to us. And it should be important to all citizens. The other issue is that by concealing these emails, the governor's office at least tried to hide from public view what they called deliberative documents. In other words, documents that they thought should be kept secret because they were part of the discussion process, sort of. But as the judge wrote, and I'll quote from this, accepting Walker's argument would potentially create a blanket exception for any communication or document that had any relevancy to ongoing budget bill debates. In effect, such a definition would constitute a protection identical to a deliberative process privilege, which has not been recognized in Wisconsin and flies in the face of long-held policies underlying Wisconsin's open records law.
Right, and we would argue against this idea that those documents should not be available. We think they should be because in the process of drafting law, you sort of learn who's exerting influence, right? And so we think that's an important debate. But I think it's a debate we're going to keep having in the state because there are people in the legislature who I think want to push this.
Now, you know, and again, this was followed by an attempt the 4th of July weekend to codify the whole deliberative process argument or documents argument. We expect this to come back. The governor did make this year he issued an edict saying essentially that the state agencies should be better on open records, should keep track of what they're doing, follow that. And the whole argument was that he wants state government to be more open to the public. That's all well and good, and that's fine. We certainly appreciate what he did this spring, but he himself was not following this approach.
Right. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. Well, Ernie, thanks a lot. It's Dave Haynes and Ernie Franzen of the Journal Sentinel Opinion Board.
Thank you.
To find that editorial, pick up today's Crossroads section or visit jazzonline.com/opinions. And that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks for listening. And join me next week as I take you behind the headlines at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.